Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's bring those good vibes to the three-point stance.
319!
180!
319!
118's at home!
Yeah, there you go!
What's that?
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three! Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pastrnak! A hat trick! And a 4-3 Boston lead!
Three!
WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you and your good vibes got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you'll lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
All right, here is 60 seconds, and I can't wait to see what trade you cooked up today.
Nope, I'm done with that. That didn't go well on social media. So today, I'm reacting a little bit more to the Jason Tatum car wash of PR appearances yesterday. First of all, I was finally told he was representing a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
So that was part of it there. So I think that makes me put some of the comments in perspective. Oh, you want me to believe that your rehab and your advancements are ahead of schedule, probably at least in part due to this pharmaceutical company. So there's a financial tie in there. Then the other thing hit me. So he wants to play next year, or at least isn't saying he's not playing. And he has a date circled. And a lot of people are like, oh, my God,
when
could it
be? What's the
date? Yeah, all of it. All that. So he's going to return. And then I was like, you need to be really careful, Jason Tatum. I don't think you should be all in on returning if it puts even a 0.5% risk for your long-term health or re-injury. Because you shouldn't be all in for one simple reason. The Boston Celtics are not all in. They dismantled the team, and we all accepted that this was a bridge year. They were treating it like a bridge year, that Jaylen Brown would be running the team. It will be less talented. Expectations will be reined in, that it was going to be a financial reset year. The aprons were all considerations, new ownership. It was all. And now Jason Tatum's going to lay it all on the line to get back out there as soon as possible. To what end? If you were going to do that and the team had known that, then maybe they shouldn't have dismantled and they should have said, well, Jason Tatum's going to be back, so let's run it back with Porzingis. We can still win a title. So, Jason Tatum, I appreciate the attitude, I appreciate the effort and the energy, but be careful. The team's not all in, so neither should you be.
That was a good one.
Felt good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt good.
That felt good.
That felt real good.
I didn't really stumble or anything. Yeah. Finished kind of right on the post.
Are you surprised by the fact he's basically dangling that carrot out there? So to kind of keep people on the hook? I think it's a ploy by the team and him to kind of keep people engaged and interested. If they think that he's coming back, maybe the players play a little bit harder. Maybe the fan support is there from the beginning. If they feel like he's not going to have any chance to play this year, then the fans won't show up. The players won't play as hard. So I think part of it is to kind of raise everybody's expectations, at least early on, just in case. What I think is, I think it's a slim chance he does, but just in case if he does, that it keeps everyone fully engaged from the very beginning.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Sort of the reasons he would do it, is he being a good salesman, first of all, PR man for the company he's working for, and probably making tens of millions of dollars. Well,
whatever this pharmaceutical company is, is it because of the pharmaceuticals he's taken is the reason he's getting back so fast?
I don't know, but it doesn't hurt that he's coming back fast.
No, it doesn't.
Now, the procedure, his age, the doctors are very confident. They are also apparently amazed with what he's doing. But I'm glad you brought, you're a player. You were a player. You had significant injuries. And what is, forget all that stuff. Forget the team stuff and the marketing stuff and all that. Just as a player, do you have to have that carrot in your own life to get through rehab? You know, as he said, he's rehabbing 6 days a week. Do you need to at least have that motivation? Because then it's easier to skip something or not go quite as hard if you have a full year off.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So in 1998, I tore my other bicep, my left bicep, yep, in training camp, first week. And I was thinking that they might put me on IR for the whole season. They didn't. And I didn't come back until week 10. But the fact they didn't put me on IR, I thought Pete would put me on. He didn't. Kept me motivated in my rehab. So that I was like, well, I'm going to come around. It's week 10, week 11. Okay. And still maybe have a chance to help this team, finish strong and get into the playoffs. So there's something to that from the player's psychological standpoint that if you've think you can maybe come back, you hold on that hope to just give you a little extra boost in your effort in rehab and coming back. So, okay. Yeah, there's something to that.
And then another example, Fitzy, would be, and I don't know what role this played in it at all, but if you remember, the Patriots, after Teddy Bruschi had a stroke, didn't put him on IR. He was placed on PUP, which left a little sliver window like, oh, could this guy could this guy actually come back? And he did, and he came back, and it was a whole story. I wonder if that helped motivate him, knowing.
I feel like part of him is doing it for the team. Like, they're like, hey, if you say you're coming back sooner than people think, it will increase. You know, look, that one player is the most important piece to this team.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger deal to the fans and to the media and the people that cover the team. If they think he's coming back, it just keeps everyone more engaged early on when they might not have been otherwise if they knew he wasn't coming back.
Fitzy, is there a downside? Is there a downside to people think? No. Him coming back, yes.
Oh.
But is there a downside to just having people think he could come back?
Go ahead, Fitzy.
Of course there is. The expectations that could be created, the false hope that could pump into fans, like, hey, halfway through the season, Tatum's going to come back. And then he doesn't come back. And he's doing the right thing. And he's actually taking the full year that it usually takes for people to recover from a severely ruptured Achilles. And I don't care if it was speed bridge, any bridge, how well he's rehabbing. Yeah, him coming back, as some Twitter doctors have suggested, in late December or January would be miraculous. And what a boost that would be for fan base, for team, everyone and everything. But you got to manage the expectations because it's a significant, significant injury.
And there is a similar issue that you can compare to with the Patriots right now. If you think of Christian Gonzalez, if they said, you know, when the first injury first happened, you know what, he's going to be on IR, you don't expect him until week 5, nobody would think anything about it.
Right.
But no, he's going to be ready for week 1. He's going to be out there. Okay. And now that he's not, he's getting a lot of kind of hate. He's getting a lot of people calling him out, a lot of people wondering what's going on because he did not fulfill the timeline that was artificially put out there by whoever and whatever. And so now he's looked at. So there's a risk to me, but if he's going to put out there that he's coming back and he doesn't, it'll look bad on Jason Tatum.
I would just be careful if I were him. He's still very much in the middle of his career.
I would too, man.
He's not anywhere near the end like Aaron Rodgers a couple years ago. You're near the end. So if you ruin the last couple years, whatever, to take a shot. Remember when he was going to come back in December if they were in the playoff hunt or whatever that was going to be? Jason Tatum, you have a half a career in front of you. So just be careful because, yeah, the team didn't exactly invest in this season.
The last question I want to get you guys to quickly to weigh in on, your expectations for roughly where the Celtics finish standing-wise this season, and then how much does a Jason Tatum return impact your expectations for what they can do? Are they a championship contender with him returning in that January window?
No, because there's no way he can return and be Jason Tatum, right? He's not going to be, oh my God, I'm going to score 30 points and have all these assists. And so even if he's out there, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm just kind of assuming here that there would be limits on his minutes and that, because you talk about in the playoffs, a guy like Jason Tatum in the playoffs plays like the whole game basically. Like, they have to ramp up their minutes to, like, 40 minutes a game. I can't imagine coming off a torn Achilles they're going to be willing to do that. So, no. You know my hopes. My hopes are they're a top four seed. They're in the top half of the Eastern Conference. Then he joins them. And, yes, I'll be talking about maybe sneaking into the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe making a little run. But do I think they're a championship contender? Like, they're going to go at the Thunder? No, I don't think so.
But what if he's got three and a half months to get it? Let's say he comes back in January and he's playing 14, 16 minutes a night, and then it ramps up to 20, and then he's up to 25. So that by April, once you get your seeding, he feels comfortable playing 30, 35 minutes a night. Like Jason Tatum, and I will put nothing beyond two things. One, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum being motivated and playing at their best together is the true Boston Garden, Boston Celtics version of Batman and Robin. And two, Trader Brad, figuring out something to do with the deadline if he believes Jason Tatum is well enough that this team could make a run at it.
Well, that would be my unknown. If they get a feeling like, oh, Tatum is going to be Tatum come postseason. And we did kind of dismantle the roster. Maybe we should, I don't know, mantle it back up. I don't even know if that's how you say that, but go get
remantle.
Somebody.
Remantle.
Or, remantle it. Because I was going to joke, like, is he bringing Porzingis with him when he comes back? No. So, yes, if that happens, Fitzy, if he
Drew
comes...
Drew Holiday's not coming back.
Right. But if somebody else comes back because Brad Stevens sees Tatum midwinter and says, Tatum is going to be Tatum by the time the playoffs are here, I need to add to this roster, figures out a way to do it, well, that is a way I could talk myself into it.
That's the only way, in my opinion. Otherwise, I don't give them much of a chance. Like, I mean, I think... You know, Cleveland's going to be better. I mean, the Pacers. There's a lot of unknowns. You know, there's a lot of unknowns with this roster. You know, is Peyton Pritchard going to step up? Is Sam Hauser going to step up? Who's the go-to big man? I mean, right now, I mean, you're looking at really is Xavier Tillman, is he your guy? So is Derek White? Can he handle a role that's he's never been counted. He's kind of been the sixth guy off the bench. He came in. He started last year, but it was in a role where you weren't focused in on him. So to me, there's just a lot of questions with the roster. And even when he comes back, I could see it being a little clunky trying to integrate himself back into the offense. Yeah.
That's also a part of it, and we'll have plenty of time to deal with this. But JB with the whole team, then potentially JB with Tatum, but Tatum's on a minutes restriction.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Tatum's fine, so JB, you take a back seat again, and you're like, wait a minute, for 6 months I've been in the front seat.
Right. And is this team going to continue to shoot up threes? Because he's not going to be beating guys off the dribble, going to the rent.
How do you know? You ever watch a good Disney movie? What if he's more explosive after this surgery?
Okay, well then.
I don't know if it's going to be Rookie of the Year, the basketball edition.
Wow. I agree. I just think I don't see him. I'm just curious what the philosophy is going to be for this offense, considering the teams we saw in the finals last year compared to how the Celtics play basketball, which I think is probably not the direction they need to go. So I just think it won't be as an easy transition as you guys might think.
All right. Well, we'll leave that one there for the time being. Because Nick Fitzy-Stevens, it is your turn. Are you ready?
I most indeed am, and I feel as though this is quite germane to the conversation.
Perfect. Well, here's 60 seconds to prove it. Go ahead.
Stanley, can I have some audio, please?
Fair to say you're playing this Sunday?
I'm excited.
All right, there you go. He's excited. I'm excited. You're excited. We should all be excited, folks, because I am here to tell you, without any declaration, insider knowledge, or certainty whatsoever, that Christian Gonzalez is playing on Sunday. Yes, finally. Our long, local, regional, if not semi-national nightmare is going to come to an end. And Christian Gonzalez, number zero on the field, number one in your defensive Patriots hearts, will be back on the field Sunday. Now, if I'm to take anything from what he said and his coach said earlier today, Christian Gonzalez said, quote, about this narrative, I never don't want to play. That narrative that's out there, I don't know where people get it from, but all I want to do is play football. He also added that he was very upset that he didn't get put into the starting lineup and was told on Saturday he was going to be a scratch. Mike Vrabel said the decision not to play Gonzo last weekend was his and his alone out of an abundance of caution. He said also that he was going to ramp it up in hopes that he could play this coming Sunday, and it couldn't come at a better time because you're concluding the first month of football where the Patriots have played more sloppy than not. They're 1-2, and they really could use the win on Sunday. Christian Gonzalez and getting out there and testing himself against someone like Tet McMillan, who in the slot and on the outside is averaging almost 16 yards a catch, would be a great re-entry And then you hit the ground running in October, and maybe we'll finally see what this Pats defense is all about.
I mean, I would argue a better time would have been week one or week two. But, yeah, he's getting out there, and we're avoiding the absolute crap show that if he missed this week, everybody would be like, wait, why didn't you put him on IR if he was going to miss all 4 weeks? Right. That makes no sense, which Bert Breer brought up. We're going to talk about that next segment. So I think you want him back out there. And obviously, Tet McMillan has been a human highlight reel down in Carolina.
Dude is way more special than I think a lot of people that back in April said, oh, I would never want to make Tet McMillan wide receiver one.
I like the guy, he's too. Good. Like, have you heard him talk?
Tet?
Yeah.
I don't think I have, Ted.
Yeah. I vibe with him. I like just his overall mindset. I think I think he's going to be a hell of a player just based off of his mindset.
But yeah, it does seem that we're going to get some Christian Gonzalez on Sunday against the Panthers, and the sooner the better, because
got that right.
He's the best player on the team. It's like the simplest argument why you're better with him out. He's the best player on the team. Let's just move on.
It's funny. We were debating this whether or not he'd have a big impact last week going into the Steelers game, and I think we all kind of said, yeah, he'd have a positive impact, but it wouldn't be a drastic impact. And then you look at how things played out. Yeah. I mean, it's just a play here or a penalty here. A touchdown given up there to a different guy.
You mean Alex Austin?
Alex Austin. And Carlton Davis, for that matter.
Yeah, but Davis would still be out there if Gonzo were
right,
out there.
You're right, but he might
Austin
not have been
isn't.
On, you know, DK Metcalf for that touchdown. It might have been Christian Gonzalez covering DK. So one play could have made the difference, is my point, and Christian Gonzalez would have maybe been the difference in winning and losing that game.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, the point was made in the postgame show and on Monday again that if Ramondre Stevenson doesn't play that game last Sunday, the Patriots very well win. If Christian Gonzalez plays last Sunday, you could very well argue the Patriots escape, even in the face of all of their own mistakes, miscues, and fumbles, that they actually do win. So yeah. I don't care if there was a setback, no setback, why he didn't play prior to now, getting him back now would be dynamite.
It doesn't sound like there was a setback.
Depends who you believe.
And we'll get to that. We'll get to that next segment. We'll play both audios, and you can believe what you choose to believe. But in the meantime, Ted Johnson, are you ready?
I am.
All right. Here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right. So I just want Stiz to play. I want you guys to listen to Bill Parcells. This was his Hall of Fame introduction into the Patriots Hall of Fame this past Saturday. Just listen to what he had to say about his time coming back.
This place has a place in my heart. It always will. We sometimes reflect on things and you wish you would have done things a little differently. Well, when I come back here and I see this, I wish I would have done things a little differently.
How about that? You had Dan Shaughnessy got caught up with Coach Parcells after the ceremony to just kind of follow up on what he meant with those comments. And this is what he told Dan. He said, quote, I don't want to leave this ambiguous. I should have been more patient with new ownership. That's all. I could have stayed a little longer. But you get into situations, you give people your word, you can't back out. And that's basically what happened. I see what they accomplished, and it just makes you think that maybe you could have done something like that. But you never know. It wouldn't have been the same as it is, probably. I think I overreacted. Basically, he, being Robert Kraft, always liked me, but I was a little bit of a blank at the time. I like his honesty, and I like him just kind of his humility and basically saying, owning his part in it, and I respect the hell out of Coach. He's a tough, tough man, a prideful man, but to see him at that event, I mean, he even says in this article, he was hugging, you know, he was hugging guys. He says, when you feel genuine love and affection from another man, it's pretty powerful. I felt that about 10 times this weekend, crying, hugging, I love yous. It was genuine, and I repeated it itself. This is a special thing, and it was emotionally very powerful. So kudos to Coach Parcells for owning his part and humbling himself to say that. It goes a long way, I think, around here. And I don't know, maybe we'll see Robert Kraft say something similar about Coach. And that would be a nice kind of thing if he did that.
Yeah, Coach Parcells, 84 years old, and I do feel like as he's aged, he's realized, like, you don't need to keep up the feuds or the hatchets.
What's the point?
Yeah, like, you know, we're all going to end up in the same place, so maybe kind of try to clean things up before you end up in that place. Now, if I was going to poke holes in one of his comments, he did say, you know, but I had already given somebody my word. I assume he's talking about the Jets.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like at some point you gave the Patriots your word, too, so you're picking which side of your word you're sticking with. But these coaching deals, I mean, he's not the first, and he wasn't the first, and he won't be the last of these crazy coaching endings and guys going from this place to that. I mean, there's literally thousands of them that happen when you go back. Lane Kiffin. We were talking about Lane Kiffin yesterday. There's a new documentary coming out sort of detailing Lane Kiffin and Al Davis and what went wrong with the Raiders, and there's just a lot that goes on.
But do you think today's NFL coaches yield the same power in an organization like Parcells did or Belichick did?
No.
I feel like today's young coaches, they're not seeking to take over the whole operation. Like Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick very much wanted to take over their operations.
Yeah.
I don't think coaches are wired that way.
That's a good point. I'd have to think a little deeper about guys, but you're right. They're not as dictatorial, if that is the word, or whatever, where they are like, this is my kingdom and I'm in full control or I'm not in control at all.
You see that more in college now, I think, than you will see in the pros.
And Dabo Sweeney checking in.
And in the post-Belichick era, I kind of think, save for the few that are going to be grandfathered in, like a McVay or an Andy Reid, who are true offensive geniuses, I don't think you're going to see that very, very much and very often. And you know what? Good for Coach Parcells to not leave an emotional end like that untied, because he does belong in that Hall of Fame, and he belongs in the good graces of Pats fans like myself.
You get the sense that Andy Reid yields a ton of power, or Nick Sirianni in Philly?
No.
It's
not in that way. And I like Reid, I don't even think he wants it.
That's
he just wants a good football team.
Yeah.
And like every once in a while, does he maybe have to tell, I don't even know, the Veach or whatever guy, like, no, I want this player over that player. Every once in a while. And the guy's probably like, okay.
Yeah.
Because you don't do it all the time. We're not button heads all the time. We put raw. Yeah, it's a great point. And Fitzy, it's a great point by you. It's definitely more the world of college football now.
No doubt.
That mentality still takes hold. All right, that's going to do it for our 3-point stances.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.